doing it for 5 years, and every night we get this.
You don't understand. It's the first night. Every night. A new audience, a new group of people waiting for me to fail. You don't know what it's like.
Darling, I do. Now just go on. You know it backwards.
What's the line? Oh, God, what's the line?
Darling, they're all waiting.
Oh, damn you, Nigel. Where would I be without you? I'll do it.
Good girl.
Ladies and gentlemen, would you kindly take your seats as the curtain will rise in 3 minutes.
Show you that the next half hour is jolly funny, ha ha ha. Sort of jolly roundelay that instant sunshine loves to play. Whatever trials may be found, the world still goes around. A fearfully cheerful idiot song. Everything's right and nothing is wrong. A tune to get you in the mood with nothing nasty, sick or crude. We're sure that alternative jokes can be nice. We may say bottom once or twice. Time to bring the announcer round as the world still goes around.
Recovering from Christmas, Richard Stilgo visits a health resort in the company of Charles Collingwood, Belinda Lang, Peter Blake, Francesca Brill and John Hull. So from Chamneys at Tring, we present Stilgo's Around with the best of the 1989 tour.
Now with clapping, we'll be drowned as the world still goes around.
Go to bed early and read. Michelle speaking. Can I help you?
Can I speak to Ron, please?
I'll see if he's here. I'm putting you on hold. Hold on. Hold on. I haven't really gone. Hold on. Hold on. I've gone to look for Ron. Hold on, hold on. We've just located Don. Hold on, hold on. He knows where Ron has gone. Hold on, hold on. Ron's run off with Yvonne. Hold on, hold on. They've gone to Bridlington. Hold on, hold on. Don says it's just a con. Hold on, hold on. Ron should be here anon. Hold on, hold on. We found Ron in the John. Hold on, hold on. Hello? Oh, blast. He's gone.
Two days after Christmas, while the rest of you watch the pile of unwatched videos mounting and listen to the Christmas tree lights melt, we are at Champneys Health Resort near Tring in the maximum security wing. Where all is quiet, apart from the noise of the strict diet patients throwing slates off the roof and demanding political status. Now, for anybody with a slightly sadistic sense of humour, a masseur, for instance, this season seems like a good time to say the word turkey. This post-Christmas period is a difficult time for turkeys. The thin, scrawny ones are wandering around, wondering where the fat, juicy ones have gone. This ability of thin turkeys to survive Christmas may actually be the key to the whole diet thing. People want to get thin because of some primeval fear of being eaten if they're fat. Though some of the treatments here do not actually bear that out. I mean, if you were put in a sauna having first been rubbed with salt, wouldn't you be deeply suspicious that this was to give you nice crackling? If you're not good enough for roasting, they zip you up into a polythene bag and boil you in a steam bath instead. Every now and then, somebody comes along and pinches you and says, beautiful, absolutely beautiful. For many of us, Christmas is the nearest we get during the year to a religious experience, and the turkey is a help in this, too, because the turkey gives you a terrible glimpse of eternity as we, the gravy boat people, watch its culinary progress through the 12 days of Christmas until the very last bit disappears into that wonderful invention of the three wise men, the Magi mix. For the turkey, basically, this progress is big C. You go from Christmas roast to cold salad, casserole, curry, croquette, consomme, the children, and the cat. It is no wonder, really, that the Poultry Breeders Association has produced a car sticker. And on it it says, remember, a turkey is for life, not just for Christmas.
Visa with access today. I know that it's wrong, but I like it that way. The things that are Caesar's, I render to Caesar, assuming that Caesar takes Amex or Visa. I juggle my cards so they stay in the air. I'm over the limit, but what do I care? For every month, Peter gets robbed to pay Paul, until Peter has nothing at all. I live in a house of cards, frightened to move, or the whole thing will tumble down flat, and the smile on my face stays firmly in place. You must give me credit for that. The house is the banks, and the car is the firms. The children's school fees are behind by two terms. I haven't a bean, but I cannot be poor, for Amex have told me to borrow some more. The statements announce I've spent more than I should, and the cards tell my fortune and say things look good. So I shuffle the cards round, and sometimes I think that the holograms look back and wink. I live in a house of cards, frightened to move, or the whole thing will tumble down flat, and the smile on my face stays firmly in place. You must give me credit for that. My father would scrimp and save all of his pay, saving yesterday's money to buy things today. He never found out that it's better to borrow, to have things today and to pay back tomorrow. He was old when he got all the things I have now, like insomnia, stress, and these lines on my brow. It isn't abnormal, it isn't a crime to borrow some money, to borrow some time. The money I've spent on this bottle of wine I will earn in September 2009. It's all based on confidence, all based on trust, and the bubble keeps rising. It must, oh, it must, till it bursts. And my epitaph's written in stone. His life was completely alone. I live in a house of cards, frightened to move, for the whole thing will tumble down flat, and the smile on my face stays firmly in place. You must give me credit for that. I owe, so off to work I go. But the smile on my face stays frozen in place. You must give me credit. Oh, please give me credit. You must give me credit.
Lots 1, 2, 8, 3, Battle of Britain medals, 10,000 for these, 6,000, thank you, sir. 6,000?
Lot 128, a DFC, a DSO and bar. Awarded 1940 to squadron leader Carr. When put like that, it sounds so bald. No one in this room can hear the Merlin's rattle or the anti-aircraft boom. Still, they're serious collectors, or else they'd not be here. Only here to buy the medals, not the memories or fear. Hello, the bidding's taken off. 10,000 for a start, wizard. That's the sort of sum to make the troops take heart. 11, 12. That little chap seems really on the ball. Squadron leader Carr could well be okay after all. 13, 14. Up she goes. Speed up the rate of climb. What's that on his briefcase? E.G. Schmidt Mannheim? Good God, the man's a Hun. 13, 40. Not so fast. No, steady. Mustn't interrupt. Keep calm. All in the past. Well, in the past or not, it doesn't seem like very long. And E.G. Schmidt of Mannheim isn't getting my old gong. At this rate, we'll never get the balance in the black. That's the 7th time I've had to buy the buggers back.
I am an insect that's vital to art. Hither and thither I artfully dart, eating my way not through ration icons, but much bigger things made of granite and bronze. I'm the Henry Moth, and if you're a sculpture, don't stand still a minute, or I will have gulpture, eating great holes in each family group, gulping down granite as if it were soup. Yes, granite is gruel, and bronze is beef broth, to the ravening teeth of the Henry Moore Moth. Henry Moore Moth, and if you're a statue, I'll perforate you if you let me get at you. Each fallen soldier, each mother and son, will look like a Swiss cheese when I'm finally done. I sweep through his works like a vandal or goth, the great holy terror, the Henry Moore Moth. I'm the Henry Moth, exceedingly choosy. I seldom touch Hepworth or Frink or Brancusi. I stick to old Moore, I'm his open air mole. I've made Moore more famous with every hole. No point in old Henry exploding with wrath. I'm the reason he's famous. I'm the Henry Moth.
Those of you with antiques for the roadshow's experts to inspect, please move to the front of the hall.
I'm sorry.
Now, this is very interesting. How long have you had it?
It was my father's. It's been in his family for ages.
Well, it's very beautiful. It's an Irish duelling pistol.
Timmy, why don't you come and see me anymore?
It appears to be in very good condition. There's no wear on the firing pin.
It's been 2 months. You've gone back to her, haven't you?
Sybil, please. The chasing on the barrel is very fine.
Timmy, you said what we had was so special.
And it's also fully loaded. Now, do be careful where you're pointing it.
Well, if I can't have you, neither can she.
And the really interesting thing about this type of pistol is that it fires backwards.
I've had this problem, see. Me and Neville, that's my brother, we got a fruit farm on the A20 just outside of Maidstone. Now, we got a long road frontage there and a lot of passing motorists on their way to the coast. So we used to get lots of them stopping and nicking the fruit. Car into the lay-by, over the edge, pick the apples, pick the pears, over the edge, gone. Well, now, we didn't want other folks picking our fruit. So we put up a notice telling them not to. Pick your own, it said. I was plain enough, I thought. Pick your own. Next day, there was hundreds of them. Brazen. Picked all the apples, even brought them up to the house. Asked to have them weighed. I said, didn't you see the sign? They said, yes. I said, it says, pick your own. They said, we have. I said, no, you haven't. You've picked mine. And he looks at me funny and he says, you ought to have strawberries. Strawberries is popular. I thought, damn cheap. Lots of them said it. So I went to change the sign. So I said, pick your own strawberries. Next day, they was all up at the house complaining they couldn't find any strawberries. I said, we don't grow strawberries. And they said, it says strawberries on the sign, and they'd have the law on me. Well, I talked to Neville about it, and he said, look, he said, there's a market out there. They want to pick our fruit. I think we should let them and charge them for it. Because he's bright, is Neville. So I thought, well, we'd better have a proper sign, not one telling them to go away like we've got now. So I wrote a real welcoming sign and stuck it up on the A20 by the gate. Come on in, it said. And to make it real friendly, I added, old fruit. We have not had a customer from that day to this. Not one. I'll tell you what, I think Prince Charles is right about folk not being able to speak the Queen's English no more. I really do. For our musical guest this week, we have a great treat. 1989 has been a wonderful year for him. He's won every award that's going. He has personally dragged the saxophone out of the murky cellars and out into the bright sunlight. He is John Hall.
This was written by Duke Ellington for his great alto saxophonist Johnny Hodges, and it's in a sentimental mood.
You see these bulging muscles, the colour of old teak? I'll bet you've never seen such an extraordinary physique. How did he get that body? No point in being coy, I might as well admit it. That's right, I'm a paper boy. To start with, it was just an early morning jog, with sudden bursts of sprinting near the houses with a dog. I'd steeplechase through gardens and hurdle over gates, then slowly I was forced to change to working out with weights. I'd work with weights on Sundays. Well, you have to be quite tough. I mean, the Times and the Observer, they're really heavy stuff. But the dailies were much lighter, till every daily rag decided that they ought to have a weekend colour mag. They added leisure supplements, the arts and travel news, supplements on babies, business, property and booze. This week, Emma Thompson helps you choose your pension. Next week, Ian Botham writes about premenstrual tension. With supplements on sepia parchment, each half a pound, I thought, I'll never make the final paper round. So instead of Independence and Times is by the ton, I cheated and delivered them the Mirror, Star and Sun. They checked with all my customers, so now I'm in disgrace. Branded as a cheat in the Olympic paper chase. Kids, take this advice from an athlete and a friend. Don't start taking tabloids. They'll get you in the end.
Good morrow, sir, and a bright one. For if Apollo were to choose a morrow, then surely he would see this day and light on it.
You're from the Royal Shakespeare Company, aren't you?
Why, cause I am found out.
And you've come to me about the sponsorship money.
If thy ship be a sponsorship, so shall we sail with her. And if thy sails fill full well, then shall my sponsorship be well afforded.
Yes, well, now I've spoken to the board, and we're willing to give you £10 million.
Bloody hell. Sorry, I mean, that's bloody marvellous.
Yeah, now, the idea is that we pay you the money to go on speaking the way you were speaking.
Yeah, I know, but I'm sorry, I'm just what, gobsmacked, you know.
There's just one condition.
Anything at all.
And so it was that the Rupert Murdoch Royal Shakespeare Company came into being. Let's join them now during the current Rupert Murdoch Barbican season for a performance of Romeo and Juliet.
But soft, what light through yonder Everest double-glazed window bricks? It is the East, and Juliet is the Sun, your family newspaper, who is already sick and pale with grief, that thou her maid art far more fair than she, thanks to L'Oreal. Be not her maid, since she is envious.
Bit of an improvement, eh, Maggie?
It certainly is, Rupert.
She needs Carter's little liver pills.
Any sign of a fire officer?
Not yet. He's never going to let us.
He's got to.
He won't.
But it's the climax of the whole show when Mandalay burns down.
Jerry says the stuff it's built out of is all right.
Still, he'll never allow it. But be nice, then.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Hello. Fire officer, sir. Sergeant Burns.
Oh, most people make a joke at that point, so thank you for your restraint. I can see we're going to get on like a house under control.
Well, Sergeant Burns.
Sergeant Burns, BSc MA PhD, sir. The men call me third degree Burns. I've often considered I'd be suitable for a career in your line of country, sir. Now, you are Rebecca the Musical, yes?
Yes.
And this is the Mandalay set which you wish to burn down?
Yes.
Every night?
Yes.
Fat chance. Still, as you know, I must test the material from which it's made to see if it's fireproof. So if I light this curtain, there. Now, if that extinguishes itself in 30 seconds, we're laughing. Who is playing Rebecca?
She's dead.
What, and you're still going on? Oh, I like that. I admire that spirit.
No, the character's been dead for ages before the play starts.
Oh, I see. Can I ask you one or two questions while we're waiting?
Yes, of course.
You, young lady, what would you do in the case of a fire?
I'd shout, fire!
Anything else?
Well, I'd probably run about waving my arms. I am an actress, after all.
Well, wrong on two counts, I'm afraid. Waving the arms is out.
Fanning the flames.
Exactly. And shouting fire is out. Causes panic.
So do I mime? I've done mime.
Now, you use the fire word, miss. The word each theatre uses instead of the word fire. It's on the notice board.
Yeah, Mr. Jett.
Oh, well done, miss.
That's it. I mean, if you find a fire in the dressing room, you say Mr. Jett is in the dressing room.
Oh, I see. What fun. Mr. Jett is in the stalls. Mr. Jett is in the stalls.
Please, miss.
Sorry.
If Mr. Jett was in the stalls, the audience would know anyway.
Exactly. The purpose is to be able to inform the cast and the staff of a fire backstage so the safety curtain can be calmly lowered to prevent the spread of fire into the auditorium.
What about us on stage, trapped by the safety curtain?
Well, once the safety curtain's down, you can run about shouting fire and waving your arms.
Mr. Burns?
Oh, yes, miss.
I think Mr. Jett's in the upstairs window of Mandalay.
Ah, now that illustrates your problem, miss. You see, in a period production, to find another name that sounds all right. What you said just now, Mr. Jett,
no,
sounds
honestly,
ridiculous.
Honestly, it's true.
Now, please don't contradict me, miss. Now, if, as you say, Rebecca is already dead, what about using Rebecca?
No, you couldn't.
You couldn't say Rebecca is in the dressing room. It would mess up the thing completely.
What about Mrs. Danvers?
Mrs. Danvers is in the upstairs window of Mandalay. Yes, that sounds all right.
Except that she is at one point.
Yes, but that's during the fire.
Well, that could be very confusing.
No, chance in a million.
Mr. Burns, Mr. Jett is all over the set now.
No. Mrs. Danvers is all over the set.
Yes, all right. Mrs. Danvers is all over the set.
That's better. Good God, Mrs. Danvers! Mrs. Danvers!
What's that noise?
It's all right. It's the Mrs. Danvers engine.
Mrs. Danvers!
Mrs. Danvers! Mrs. Danvers! Mrs. Danvers! Mrs. Danvers! Mrs. Danvers! Mrs. Danvers!
When I left drama school, I waited for the call from the National or the RSC. Would it be Ophelia, Cordelia, or Celia? Maybe they'd have nothing that was big enough for me. So I wrote off to EastEnders, where you have to make a start. I auditioned for Lloyd Webber, but Sarah got the part. I played women in commercials whose wash was always grey. I bought trainer shoes in Brookside and bare feet in Howard's Way. Then finally I saw the ad, wanted buxom charmer with ability to improvise in Jacobean drama. Now I am a wench, serving mead to Swinny Swedes on a bench, quaffing quarts of ale that thirst for to quench our meat. I'm a wench. Here in this Tudor hall with beams of fiberglass, we provide a Tudor interlude. A ghastly little summary of flummery and mummery, a banquet frankly rank with ye olde moldy food. Every chicken is a fowl and has potato in its jerkin. Every pig is sucking, and ale comes by the firkin. And after they have feasted and they're squiffy as a newt, we sing the bloody madrigals while Simon plays the lute to a load of Swedes and Germans in rented Tudor stuff, convinced that every wench would like a rented bit of rough. So I am a wench, singing dirty songs in Latin or French, using language that would make troopers blench at me. I'm a wench. Hey, nonny, nonny, pass the loving cup. If I hear green sleeves once again, I'll throw up. Hey, nonny, nonny, get your hand off my knee, and that right speedily. Oh, I am a wench, smiling grimly with my teeth at full clench. It's an instant cry from Dame Judy Dench on me. I'm a wench, I'm a wench.
Still Goes Around stars Charles Collingwood, Belinda Lang, Peter Blake and Francesca Brill, with musical guest John Harl. Richard Stilgo wrote the songs and the sketches, and the producer was Neil Cargill.
The Broadcasting Complaints Commission has received several complaints about a BBC announcer's apparent drunkenness during an announcement earlier this week. The complainant said it was unmistakable, though well concealed. The Complaints Commission were divided in their verdict, so it has been decided to play the tape of the announcement again so that listeners can decide for themselves. Here it is.